The Shadow Over Innsmouth by H.P. Lovecraft, read for you by Josh Gentry of Cthulhu and Friends. Part 3. It must have been some imp of the perverse, or some sardonic pull from dark, hidden sources, which made me change my plans as I did. I had long before resolved to limit my observations to architecture alone, and I was even then hurrying towards the square in an effort to get quick transportation out of this festering city of death and decay. But the sight of old Zadok Allen set up new currents in my mind and made me slacken my pace uncertainly. I had been assured that the old man could do nothing but hint at wild, disjointed, and incredible legends, and I had been warned that the natives made it unsafe to be seen talking to him. Yet the thought of this aged witness to the town's decay, with memories going back to the early days of ships and factories, was a lure that no amount of reason could make me resist. After all, the strangest and maddest of myths are often merely symbols or allegories based upon truth. And old Zadok must have seen everything which went on around Innsmouth for the last 90 years. Curiosity flared up beyond sense and caution, and in my youthful egotism, I fancied I might be able to sift a nucleus of real history from the confused, extravagant outpouring I would probably extract with the aid of raw whiskey. I knew that I could not accost him then and there, for the firemen would surely notice and object. Instead, I reflected, I would prepare by getting some bootleg liquor at a place where the grocery boy had told me it was plentiful. Then I would loaf near the fire station in apparent casualness and fall in with old Zadok after he had started on one of his frequent rambles. The youth said that he was very restless, seldom sitting around the station for more than an hour or two at a time. A quart bottle of whiskey was easily, though not cheaply, obtained in the rear of a dingy variety store just off the square in Elliott Street. The dirty-looking fellow who waited on me had a touch of the staring Innsmouth look, but was quite civil in his way. Being perhaps used to the custom of such convivial strangers, truckmen, gold buyers, and the like, as were occasionally in town. Re-entering the square, I saw that luck was with me. For, shuffling out of Payne Street around the corner of the Gilman House, I glimpsed nothing less than the tall, lean, tattered form of old Zadok Allen himself. In accordance with my plan, I attracted his attention by brandishing my newly purchased bottle, and soon realized that he had begun to shuffle wistfully after me as I turned into Waite Street on my way to the most deserted region I could think of. I was steering my course by the map the grocery boy had prepared, and was aiming for the wholly abandoned stretch of southern waterfront which I had previously visited. The only people in sight there had been the fishermen on the distant breakwater, and by going a few squares south, I could get beyond the range of these, finding a pair of seats on some abandoned wharf, and being free to question old Zadok unobserved for an indefinite time. Before I reached Main Street, I could hear a faint and wheezy, "Hey, mister!" behind me, and I presently allowed the old man to catch up and take copious pulls from the quart bottle. I began putting out feelers as we walked along to Water Street and turned southward amidst the omnipresent desolation and crazily tilted ruins, but found that the aged tongue did not loosen as quickly as I had expected. At length, I saw a grass-grown opening toward the sea between crumbling brick walls, with the weedy length of an earth and masonry wharf projecting beyond. Piles of moss-covered stones near the water promised tolerable seats, and the scene was sheltered from all possible view by a ruined warehouse on the north. Here, I thought, was the ideal place for a long secret colloquy. So I guided my companion down the lane and picked out spots to sit in among the mossy stones. The air of death and desertion was ghoulish, and the smell of fish almost insufferable, but I was resolved to let nothing deter me. About 4 hours remained for conversation if I were to catch the 8 o'clock coach for Arkham, and I began to dole out more liquor to the ancient tippler, meanwhile eating my own frugal lunch. In my donations, I was careful not to overshoot the mark, for I did not wish Zadok's venous garrulousness to pass into a stupor. After an hour, his furtive taciturnity showed signs of disappearing, But, much to my disappointment, he still sidetracked my questions about Innsmouth and its shadow-haunted past. He would babble of current topics, revealing a wide acquaintance with newspapers and a great tendency to philosophize in a sententious village fashion. Toward the end of the second hour, I feared my quart of whiskey would not be enough to produce results, and was wondering whether I had better leave old Zadok and go back for more. Just then, however, chance made the opening which my questions had been unable to make, and the wheezing ancient's rambling took a turn that caused me to lean forward and listen alertly. My back was toward the fishy-smelling sea, but he was facing it, and something or other caused his wandering gaze to light on the low, distant line of Devil Reef, then showing plainly and almost fascinatingly above the waves. The sight seemed to displease him, for he began a series of weak curses which ended in a confidential whisper and a knowing leer. He bent toward me, took hold of my coat lapel, and hissed out some hints that could not be mistaken.
"There's where it all begun. That cursed place of all wickedness where the deep water starts. Gate of hell. Sheer drop down to a bottom no sounding line can touch. Old Captain Obed done it. Him that found out Morn was good for him in the South Sea Islands. Everybody was in a bad way them days. Trade falling off. Mills losing business. Even the new ones. And the best of our men folks killed a privateering in the War of 1812 or lost with the Elizy Brig and the Ranger Snow. Both of them Gilman vendors. Obed Marsh, he had 3 ships afloat. Brigantine Columbia, Brig Hetty, and Bark Sumatra Queen. He was the only one who's kept on with the East India and Pacific trade, though Esdras Martin's barkentine Malay Pride made a venture as late as 28. Nobody was ever like Captain Obed. Old Limb of Satan. I can mind him a-telling about furrin parts and calling all the folks stupid for going to Christian meeting and bearing their burdens meek and lowly. Says they'd order get better gods like some of the folks in the Angies. God is it'd bring them good fishing in return for their sacrifices and really answer folks' prayers. Matt Elliott, his first mate, talked a lot too, only he was again folks doing any heathen things. Told about an island east of Otaheite where they was a lot of stone ruins older than anybody knew anything about. Kinda like them on Ponape in the Carolines, but with carvings of faces that looked like the big statues on Easter Island. They was a little volcanic island near there, too, where they was other ruins with different carvings. Ruins all wore away like they'd been under the sea once, and pictures of awful monsters all over them. Well, sir, Matt, he says the natives around there had all the fish they could catch and sported bracelets and armlets and head rigs made out of queer kind of gold and covered with pictures of monsters just like the ones carved over the ruins on the little island. Sort of fish-like frogs or frog-like fishes that was drawn in all kinds of positions like they was human beings. Nobody could get out of them where they got all the stuff, and all the other natives wondered how they managed to find fish in plenty, even when the very next islands had lean pickings. Matt, he got to wandering too, and so did Captain Obed. Obed, he notices, besides, that lots of the handsome young folks would drop out of sight for good from year to year, and that they weren't many old folks around. Also, he thinks some of them folks look darn queer, even for Kanakis. It took Obed to get the truth out of them heathen. I don't know how he done it, but he begun by trading for the gold-like things they wore. Asked them where they come from and if they could get more, and finally wormed the story out of the old chief, Wallakea, they called him. Nobody but Obed had ever believed the old yeller devil, but the captain could read folks like they was books. Nobody never believes me now when I tell him, and I don't suppose you will, young feller. Though, come to look at you, you kinda got them sharp reading eyes like Obed had.
The old man's whisper grew fainter, and I found myself shuddering at the terrible and sincere portentousness of his intonation, even though I knew his tale could be nothing but drunken fantasy.
"Well, sir, Obed, he learnt that these things on this earth is most folks never heard about, and wouldn't believe if they did hear. Seems these Kanakis was sacrificing heaps of their young men and maidens to some kind of god things that lived under the sea, and getting all kinds of favor in return. They met the things on the little islet with the queer ruins, and it seems them awful pictures of frogfish monsters was supposed to be pictures of these things. Maybe they was the kind of critters that has got all the mermaid stories and such started. They had all kinds of cities on the sea bottom, and this island was heaved up from there. Seems they was some of the things alive in the stone buildings when the islands come up sudden to the surface. That's how the Kanakis got wind they was down there. Made sign talk as soon as they got over being scared and pieced up a bargain afore long. Them things liked human sacrifices. It had them ages afore, but lost track of the upper world after a time. What they done to the victims, it ain't for me to say. I guess Obed wasn't none too sharp about asking. But it was all right with the heathens, because they'd been having a hard time and was desperate about everything. They give a certain number of young folks to the sea things twice every year. May Eve and Halloween, regulars could be. Also some of the carved knickknacks they made. What the things agreed to give them in return was plenty of fish. They drove them in from all over the sea, and a few gold-like things now and then. Well, as I says, the natives met the things on the little volcanic island, going there in canoes with the sacrifices, etc., and bringing back any of the gold-like jewels as was coming to them. At first, the things didn't never go onto the main island, but after a time, they come to want to. Seems they hankered after mixing with the folks and having gent ceremonies on the big days, May Eve and Halloween. You see, they was able to live both in and out of the water, what they call amphibians, I guess. The Kanakis told them as how folks from the other islands might want to wipe them out if they ever got wind of their being there, but they says they don't care much because they can wipe out the whole brood of humans if they was willing to bother. That is, any as didn't have certain signs such as was used once by the lost old ones, whoever they was. But not wanting to bother, they lay low when anybody visited the island. When it come to mating with them toad-looking fishes, the Kanakis kind of balked, but finally they learned something has put a new face on the matter. Seems that human folks has got a kind of relation to such water beasts, that everything alive came out of the water once and only needs a little change to go back again. Them things told the Kanakis that if they mixed bloods, there'd be children as it look human at first, but later turn more like the things, till finally they take to the water and gin the main lot of things down there. And this is the important part, young feller. Them is turned into fish things and went in the water. Wouldn't never die. Them things never died except they was killed violent. Well, sir, it seems by the time Obed owed them islanders, they was all full of fish blood from them deep water things. When they got old and begun to shoe it, they was kept hid until they felt like taking to the water and quitting the place. Some was more touched than the others, and some never did change quite enough to take to the water, but mostly they turned out just the way them things said. Them as was born more like the things changed early, but them as was nearly human sometimes stayed on the island till they was past 70, though they'd usually go down under for trial trips afore that. Folks his had took to the water generally come back a good deal to visit, so's a man would often be a-talking to his own five times great-grandfather who'd left the dry land a couple of hundred years or so afore. Everybody got out of the idea of dying, except in canoe wars with the other islanders, or a sacrifice to the sea gods down below, or from snake bite or plague or sharp galloping ailments or something afore they could take to the water, but simply look forward to a kind of change that wasn't a bit horrible after a while. They thought what they'd got was well worth all they'd had to give up, and I guess Obed kind of come to think the same way himself when he'd chewed over old Wallachea's story a bit. Wallachea, though, was one of the few as hadn't gotten none of the fish blood, being of the royal line that intermarried with royal lions on other islands. Wallachea, he showed Obed a lot of rites and incantations as had to do with the sea things, and let him see some of the folks in the village as had changed a lot from human shape. Somehow or other, though, he never would let him see one of the regular things from right out of the water. In the end, he gave him a funny kind of thingamajig made out of lead or something that he said would bring up the fish tanks from any place in the water where there might be a nest of them. The idea was to drop it down with the right kind of prayers and such, while Akay allowed as the things were scattered all over the world so's anybody that looked about could find a nest and bring them up if they was wanted. Mad, he didn't like this business at all, and wanted Obed should keep away from the island, but the captain was sharp for gain and found he could get them gold-like things so cheap it'd pay for him to make a specialty of them. Things went on that way for years, and Obed got enough of that gold-like stuff to make him start the refinery in Waite's old run-down Fullett Mill. He didn't dare sell the pieces like they was, for folks would be all the time asking questions. All the same, his crews would get a piece and dispose of it now and then, even though they was swore to keep quiet, and he let his women folks wear some of the pieces as was more human-like than most. Well, come about 38, when I was 7 years old, Obed, he found the island people all wiped out between voyages. Seems the other islanders had got wind of what was going on and had took matters into their own hands. Suppose they must have had, after all, them old magic signs as the sea thing says was the only things they was afeard of. No telling what any of them Kanakis will chance to get a hold of when the sea bottom throws up some island with ruins older than the deluge. Pious cusses these was. They didn't leave nothing standing on either the main island or the little volcanic islet except what parts of the ruins was too big to knock down. In some places, they was little stones strewn about, like charms, with something on them like what you call a swastika nowadays. Probably them was the old one's signs. Folks all wiped out. No trace of no gold-like things, and none of the nearby Kanakis would breathe a word about the matter. Wouldn't even admit they'd ever been any people on that island. That naturally hit Obed pretty hard, seeing as his normal trade was doing very poor. It hit the whole of Innsmouth too, because in seafaring days what profited the master of a ship generally profited the crew proportionate. Most of the folks around the town took the hard times kinda sheep-like and resigned, but they was in bad shape because the fishing was petering out and the mills weren't doing none too well. Then's the time Obed, he begun a-cursing at the folks for being dull sheep and praying to a Christian heaven as didn't help him none. He told him he know the folks as prayed to gods that give something you really need, and says if a good bunch of men would stand by him, he could maybe get a hold in certain powers as would bring plenty of fish and quite a bit of gold. Of course, them is sarved on the Sumatra Queen and see the island knowed what he meant, and one none too anxious to get close to see things like they'd hear tell on, but them as didn't know what 'twas all about got kind of swayed by what Obed had to say and begun to ask him what he could do to set him on the way to the faith, as it bring them results.
Here, the old man faltered, mumbled, and lapsed into a moody and apprehensive silence, glancing nervously over his shoulder, and then turning back to stare fascinatedly at the distant black reef. When I spoke to him, he did not answer, so I knew I would have to let him finish the bottle. The insane yarn I was hearing interested me profoundly, for I fancied there was contained within it a sort of crude allegory based upon the strangeness of Innsmouth and elaborated by an imagination at once creative and full of scraps of exotic legend. Not for a moment did I believe that the tale had any really substantial foundation, but nonetheless the account held a hint of genuine terror, if only because it brought in references to strange jewels clearly akin to the malign tiara I had seen at Newburyport. Perhaps the ornaments had, after all, come from some strange island, and possibly the wild stories were lies of the bygone Obed himself rather than of this antique toper. I handed Zadok the bottle, and he drained it to the last drop. It was curious how he could stand so much whiskey, for not even a trace of thickness had come into his high, wheezy voice. He licked the nose of the bottle and slipped it into his pocket, then beginning to nod and whisper softly to himself. I bent close to catch any articulate words he might utter, and thought I saw a sardonic smile behind the stained, bushy whiskers. Yes, he was really forming words, and I could grasp a fair proportion of them.
Poor Matt. Matt, he allus was agin it. Tried to line up the folks on his side, and had long talks with the preachers. No use. They run the congregational parson out of town, and the Methodist feller quit. Never did see Resolve Babcock, the Baptist parson, again. Wrath of Jehovah. I was a mighty little critter, but I heard what I heard and seen what I seen. Dagon and Ashtoreth, Belial and Beelzebub, Golden Calf and the idols of Canaan and the Philistines, Babylonish abomination, many, many Tekel Upharsin.
He stopped again, and from the look in his watery blue eyes, I feared he was close to a stupor after all. But when I gently shook his shoulder, he turned on me with astonishing alertness and snapped out some more obscure phrases.
Don't believe me, eh? Then just tell me, young feller, why Cap'n Obed and 20-odd other fellers used to row out to Devil Reef in the dead of night and chant things so loud you could hear them all over town when the wind was right. Tell me that, eh? And tell me why Obed was always dropping heavy things down into the deep water, the other side of the reef where the bottom shoots down like a cliff lower than you can sound. Tell me what he done with that funny-shaped lad thingamajig as Walla Kaye gave him, hey boy? And what did they all howl on May Eve and again the next Halloween? And why'd the new church parsons, fellas as used to be sailors, wear them queer robes and cover themselves with them gold-like things Obed brung, hey?
The watery blue eyes were almost savage and maniacal now, and the dirty white beard bristled electrically. Old Zadok probably saw me shrink back, for he had begun to cackle evilly.
Beginning to see, eh? Maybe you'd like to have been me in them days, when I see things at night out to sea from the cupola top of my house. Oh, I can tell you, little pitchers have big ears, and I wasn't missing nothing of what was gossiped about Cap'n Obed and the folks out to the reef. How about the night I took my pa's ship's glass to the cupola and seed the reef a bristling thick with shapes that dove off quick soon's the moon rose? Obed and the folks was in a dory, but them shapes dove off the far side into the deep water and never come up. How'd you like to be a little shaver alone up in the cupola watching the shapes as wasn't human shapes, hey?
The old man was getting hysterical, and I began to shiver with a nameless alarm. He laid a gnarled claw on my shoulder, and it seemed to me that its shaking was not altogether that of mirth.
"Suppose one night ye seed something heavy heaved off an Obed's door beyond the reef, and then learned next day a young feller was missing from home. Hey, did anybody ever seed hide or hair of Hiram Gilman again? Did they? And Nick Pierce, and Luelli Waite, and Adoniram Southwick, and Henry Garrison, hey? Shapes talking sign languages with their hands. Them as had real hands. Well, sir, that was the time Obed begun to get on his feet again. Folks see his three daughters wearing gold-like things as nobody ever seen on them before, and smoke started coming out of the refinery chimney. Other folks were prospering too. Fish begun to swarm into the harbor fit to kill, and heaven knows what size cargoes we began to ship out to Newburyport, Arkham, and Boston. 'Twas then Obed got the old branch railroad put through. Some Kingsport fishermen heard about the catch and come up in sloops, but they was all lost. Nobody ever seen them again. And just then, our folks organized the esoteric Order of Dagon and bought Masonic Hall off in Calvary Commandery for it. Matt Elliott was a mason and again the selling, but he dropped out of sight just then. Remember, I ain't saying Obed was set on having things just like they was on that Canuck Island. But I didn't think he aimed at first to do no mixing, nor raise no youngins to take to the water and turn into fishes with eternal life. He wanted them gold things and was willing to pay heavy, and I guess the others was satisfied for a while. Come in 46. The town done some looking and thinking for itself. Too many folks missing. Too much wild preaching at meeting of a Sunday. Too much talk about that reef. I guess I done a bit by telling Selectman Mowry what I see from the cupola. They was a party one night as followed Obed's crowd out to the reef, and I heard shots betwixt the dories. Next day, Obed and 32 others was in jail, with everybody a-wondering just what was afoot, just what charge a ginna could be got to hold. God, if anybody looked ahead. A couple of weeks later, when nothing had been thrown into the sea for that long.
Zadok was showing signs of fright and exhaustion, and I let him keep silence for a while, though glancing apprehensively at my watch. The tide had turned and was coming in now, and the sound of the waves seemed to arouse him. I was glad of that tide, for at high water the fishy smell might not be so bad. Again, I strained to catch his whispers.
That awful night, I seen them. I was up in the cupola. Hordes of them, swarms of them, all over the reef and swimming up the harbor into the Monoxid. God, what happened in the streets of Innsmouth that night? They rattled our door, but Paul wouldn't open. Then he climbed out the kitchen window with his musket to find Selectman Mowry and see what he could do. Mounds of the dead and the dying. Shots and screams. Shouting in old squire and town squire and new church green. Jail throat open. Proclamation. Treason. Called it the plague when folks came in and found half our people missing. Nobody left but them as would join with Obed and them things or else keep quiet. Never heard my pa no more.
The old man was panting and perspiring profusely. His grip on my shoulder tightened.
Everything cleaned up in the morning, but there was traces. Obed, he kinda takes charge and says things is going to be changed. Others will worship with us at meeting time, and certain houses has got to entertain guests. They wanted to mix like they done with the Kanakis, and he for one didn't feel bound to stop them. Far gone was Obed, just like a crazy man on the subject. He said they brung us fish and treasure and should have what they hankered after. Nothing was to be different on the outside, only we was to keep shy as strangers if we knowed what was good for us. We all had to take the oath of Dagon, and later they was second and third oaths that some on us took. Them as it helped special, they get special rewards, gold and such. No use balking, for they was millions of them down there. They'd rather not start rising and wiping out humankind, but if they was gave away and forced to, they could do a lot toward just that. We didn't have them old charms to cut them off like folks in the South Sea did, and them Kanakis would never give away their secrets. Yield up enough sacrifices and savage knickknacks and harborage in the town when they wanted it, and they'd let well enough alone. Wouldn't bother no strangers as might bear tales outside. That is, without they got pride. All in the band of the faithful, order a Dagon, and the children should never die, but go back to the Mother Hydra and Father Dagon, what we all come from once. Yeah, Cthulhu for Tiger, Pingui McNive, Cthulhu Relay, but Wild Nugget for Tiger. Old Zadok was fast lapsing into stark raving, and I held my breath. Poor old soul, to what pitiful depths of hallucination had his liquor, plus his hatred of the decay, alienage, and disease around him, brought that fertile, imaginative brain? He began to moan now, and tears were coursing down his channeled cheeks into the depths of his beard. God, what I seen since I was 15 years old. Many tackle of parsing. The folks as was missing, and them as killed theirselves. Them as told things in Arkham or Ipswich or such places was all called crazy, like you're calling me right now, but God, what I seen. They'd have killed me long ago for what I know. Only I took the first and second oaths of Dagon off an Obed, and so I was protected unless a jury of them proved I told things knowing and deliberate. But I wouldn't take the third oath. I'd have died rather than take that. It got worse around Civil War time, when children born since 46 began to grow up. Some of them, that is. I was afeard. Never did no prying after that awful night, and never seen one of them close to in all my life. That is, never no full blood. I went to the war, and if I'd had any guts or sense, I'd have never come back, but settled away from here. But folks wrote me things once so bad. That, I suppose, was because government draftmen was in town after 63. After the war, it was just as bad again. People begun to fall off, mills and shops shut down, shipping stopped, and the harbor choked up. Railroad give up, but they never stopped swimming in and out of the river from that cursed reef of Satan. And more attic windows got boarded up, and more noises was heard in houses as once supposed to have nobody in them. Folks outside had their stories about us. Suppose you heard a plenty on them, seeing what questions ye asked. Stories about things they've seen now and then, and about that queer jewelry still comes up from some wires and ain't quite all melted up. But nothing never gets definite. Nobody'll believe nothing. They call them gold-like things pirate loot and allow the Innsmouth folks his fur and blood or his distempered or something. Besides, them that lives here shoo off as many strangers as they can and encourage the rest not to get very curious, especially around nighttime. Beasts balk at the critters, horses worse than mules. But when they got autos, that was all right. In 46, Captain Obed took a second wife that nobody in town never see. Some says he didn't want to, but was made to by them as he'd called in, and had 3 children by her. 2 has disappeared young, but one guy has looked like anybody else and was educated in Europe. Obed finally got her married off by a trick to an Arkham fella as didn't suspect nothing. But nobody outside'll have nothing to do with Innsmouth folks now. Barnabas Marsh that runs the refinery now is Obed's grandson by his first wife, son of Onesiphorus, his eldest son, but his mother was another of them as one never seed outdoors. Right now, Barnabas is about changed. Can't shed his eyes no more and is all out of shape. They say he still wears clothes, but he'll take to the water soon. Maybe he's tried it already. They do sometimes go down for little spells before they go for good. Ain't been seen about in public for nigh on 10 years. Don't know how his poor wife can feel. She come from Ipswich, and they not lynched Barnabas when he courted her 50-odd years ago. Obed, he died in 78, and all the next generation is gone now. The first wife's children dead, and the rest, God knows.
The sound of the incoming tide was now very insistent, and little by little it seemed to change the old man's mood from maudlin tearfulness to watchful fear. He would pause now and then to renew those nervous glances over his shoulder out toward the reef, and despite the wild absurdity of his tale, I could not help beginning to share his vague apprehensiveness. Zadok now grew shriller and seemed to be trying to whip up his courage with louder speech.
Hey! You, why don't you say something? How'd you like to be living in a town like this, with everything rotten and dying and boarded up monsters crawling and bleating, barking and hopping around black cellars and attics every way you turn? Hey, how'd you like to hear the howling night after night from the churches and order a day gone hauling and know what's doing part of the howling? How'd you like to hear what comes from that awful reef every May Eve, Hallowmas, hey? Think the old man's crazy, eh? Well, sure. Let me tell you, that ain't the worst.
Zadok was really screaming now, and the mad frenzy of his voice disturbed me more than I care to own.
Curse you! Don't you sit there staring at me with them eyes! I tell Obed Marsh he's in hell, and he's got to stay there. In hell, I said, can't get me. I ain't doing nothing, no nobody, nothing. Oh, you young fella. Well, even if I ain't told nobody nothing yet, I'm going to now. You just sit and listen to me, boy. This is what I ain't never told nobody. I says I didn't do no prying after that night, but I found out about things just the same. You want to know what the real horror is? Hey, well, it's this. It ain't what them fish fellas has done, but what they're going to do. They're bringing things up out of where they come from into the town. Been doing it for years, and slacking it up lately. Them houses north of the river, betwixt Water and Main Street, is full of them. Them devils and what they brung, and when they get ready, I say when they get ready. Ever hear tell of a Shoggoth? Hey, do you hear me? I tell you, I know what these things is. I seen them a lot.
The hideous suddenness and inhuman frightfulness of the old man's shriek almost made me faint. His eyes looking past me toward the malodorous sea were positively starting from his head, while his face was a mask of fear worthy of a Greek tragedy. His bony claw dug monstrously into my shoulder, and he made no motion as I turned my head to look at whatever he had glimpsed. There was nothing that I could see, only the incoming tide with perhaps one set of ripples more local than the long-flung line of breakers. But now, Zadok was shaking me. And I turned back to watch the melting of that fear-frozen face into a chaos of twitching eyelids and mumbling gums. Presently, his voice came back, albeit as a trembling whisper.
Get out of here. Get out of here. They've seen us. Get out for your life. Don't wait for nothing. They know now. Run for it, quick. Out of this town.
Another heavy wave dashed against the loosening masonry of the bygone wharf and changed the mad ancient's whisper into another inhuman and blood-curdling scream. Before I could recover my scattered wits, he had relaxed his clutch on my shoulder and dashed wildly inland toward the street, reeling northward around the ruined warehouse wall. I glanced back at the sea, but there was nothing there. And when I reached Water Street and looked along it toward the north, there was no remaining trace of Zadok Allen.